Yeah. All right. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning movie reviews. That's right. Every Monday morning, we review the movies. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, and myself. Got lots of movies to talk about this week. Plus, we want to talk about the box office. And Eric got back earlier this week. He got back from Austin, Texas, where he attended the South by Southwest Film Festival. And we want to get our final report about that. And also, the Chicago Film Critics Association has their Chicago Critics Film Festival, May 20th through the 26th at the Music Box Theater, and some of the movies for that festival have been announced, and we'll talk about that as well. So lots to get to. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, and you can check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow. So like us there, and let's welcome Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Eric. Let's talk a little bit before we get into the new movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The Chicago Critics Film Festival. This is the third annual, right?
Fourth annual.
Fourth. Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So this will be the fourth annual one. And you've announced the film critics have announced seven movies. Is that right? Seven titles?
Seven titles. Yes.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about that. When it is, it's May 20th through the 26th, Music Box Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And Colin, you mentioned last week that the festival passes are available.
Yes, on the Music Box website and our website.
Yeah, and that's you can check out musicboxtheater.com for more information. And it's $150 for the full festival pass
for the entire week. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, cool. And it's unlimited, so you could see a bunch of movies for that $150, right?
Unlimited movies, unlimited shorts, everything Colin programs, everything we program for the entire week, access to our closing and opening night shindigs. The pass gets you access to everything.
Okay, cool. That's great. That's a great deal then. So you can check it out online as well. And Colin, you've been working I'm assuming you've been watching a lot of shorts lately?
Yeah, I'm up to about 70 now. yeah, every year. But I'm narrowing it down now. I've got a couple, sort of temporary lists of programs that I'm doing. A lot of great documentaries this year. Like, I could do a whole block of just documentary shorts this year alone. I don't think I'm going to, but it'll be a mix of, foreign documentary, animated, straight-up comedy, straight-up drama. It's a little mix of everything.
That's
great.
It's
pretty
great. Really cool.
Yeah.
Very, very, very cool. Well, your eyes must be falling out of your head, Colin.
yeah, it's just every day there's another one showing up in my inbox, and I have no idea what it's going to be, and I just click play and let it, surprise me, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, so, that's cool. Yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun, too. Yeah, all right. And then, Eric, talk about the movies that have been announced. Which ones can we see here?
Well, a few of the movies that we actually had talked about at Sundance, but there's one that I actually didn't get to see at Sundance that a couple of our guys did see and recommended. And we programmed it, and I just saw it at South by Southwest, and it's called Morris from America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the new film by Chad Hartigan, who directed This is Martin Bonner
a few
years ago. Mm-hmm. And this one, it stars Marquise Chrisman. He's a 13-year-old, or I think he's actually a 14-year-old African-American kid who's just sort of getting into those teenage years, and he's living in Germany with his father, played by Craig Robinson. And it's sort of this great coming of age story of him starting to get interested in girls. He wants to be a rapper, and it's just like This is Martin Bonner. It has this wonderful just sort of natural flow to the material. And Craig Robinson has never given a better performance, in my opinion. He's actually terrific in this movie, and so that's one of them. We unique horror film from Sundance called Trash Fire. The guy who did Richard Bates Jr., who did Excision,
mm-hmm.
Did this really crazy comedy horror hybrid with Adrian Grenier and Angela Trimber that I hope people like as much as I do.
You mentioned that when you were doing your reviews from – where did you see that one? Was that Sundance?
Sundance.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I remember
Sundance
you talking about that because I liked Excision a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. Okay, what about – I see that you also have Life Animated.
Yeah, Life Animated is this really, this is one I haven't seen yet, but I can't wait to see it, because I've been told it's actually something to be right up my alley. It's a story about a father whose son is autistic, and he started to learn to communicate by using dialogue from Disney animated films.
Oh, I read about this. This one sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I hear it's absolutely terrific. I can't wait to see it myself. And that's one of the many great documentaries we're going to have at the festival this year.
Okay. All right. And then there's also a movie that you talked about called Goat.
Yeah. Co-written by David Gordon Green, co-produced by James Franco. And it's based on a true story of some hazing incidents that, you know, have happened around the college campuses. This one deals with one very specific one. Co-stars Nick Jonas of the Jonas Brothers. James Franco has a small role in the film. And it's a really great character study about sort of, you know, college age machismo and, you know, what it takes to go from being just sort of an average guy to, you know, sort of enduring this thing and as a means to, you know, growing up, I guess.
All right. And then another version of Beauty and the Beast has been made.
Yeah. And this one is done by Christoph Gans, who did Brotherhood of the Wolf. And this one premiered at Berlin a few years ago and has been kind of sitting around. It's Vincent Cassel and Lea Seydoux are in this movie playing the Beast and Beauty, respectively. Mm-hmm. And it's just this gorgeous. I mean, you can expect from the guy who did Brotherhood of the Wolf that it's this like this gorgeous spectacle. Adult. This is not the
yeah,
Disney
right.
live action version you're going to get next year, but going to look absolutely gorgeous on that music box screen.
Okay. And Black Coat's Daughter is another one. And you talked Black about Coat's you
Daughter
talked about this
Toronto
one.
Toronto last year.
Yeah, you talked about that one
by
too.
Oz Perkins, who is Anthony Perkins' son.
Yeah.
And he's been in a few Wes Craven films as an actor too, and it's this gothic story about girls left behind at a boarding school, and another girl who is trying to get back to the boarding school, and sort of the things that are going on at that boarding school that you'll have to find out for yourself.
Okay, and then finally, there's a Hunt for Wilder People.
Yeah, Hunt for the Wilder People.
Wilder
yeah,
people,
this
yeah.
is the new film from Taika Waititi, who did What We Do in the Shadows, which I just watched earlier tonight again.
Hilarious movie.
Unbelievably funny movie.
I mean, you guys know, Colin, you've seen it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you guys know that there is a sequel, right, that they're doing?
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be mm-hmm. about it's going to be about the werewolves.
It's called Werewolves.
I can't wait. That yeah. was the fun. To me, that was the funniest stuff in the movie, was the stuff between them and the werewolves.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah, not werewolves. We're werewolves, not swearwolves.
Yeah.
And this is new one, Hunt for the Wilder People, another really quirky comedy. I just saw it at South by Southwest. It's really funny.
Yeah.
It's about a boy going through the he's adopted by his, like, his 18 family and whatnot, and Sam Neill plays the crotchety uncle, and when the boy runs away, Sam Neill goes after him, and it sparks this sort of countrywide manhunt for these two in the Australian brush or the New Zealand brush, one of those two.
Yeah.
And it's really funny. So if you're a fan of What We Do in the Shadows, you're going to really enjoy this movie too.
Okay. All right. Well, those have all been announced. And now how many more films are you guys going to slowly roll out more titles?
We're probably, I don't know if we're going to do any more sneak previews. We haven't done that in the past, but sometime mid to late April, we will announce the full lineup and schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still finalizing some films right now. But what we got that we haven't been announced, I'm telling you, just you better buy those passes now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to be missing out. You don't want to pay just individual tickets. You're going to want to be there for this entire festival because it's really going to be pretty amazing this year.
Okay. All right. And that is the Chicago Critics Film Festival, May 20th through the 26th at the Beautiful Music Box Theater on Southport. You know, you should get your fest passes now because that's the best deal. $150 right now, and it's all access pass to everything. And, Colin, how many shorts do you think you're going to – do you have to narrow it down to? Are you going to do one, two, three nights of short festivals?
Typically, it's two short programs, around 90 minutes each. So it usually comes out between 12 and 15 films. That's what I'm anticipating right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've got till the middle of April, so you got about a month almost to figure
yeah,
it out.
Yeah. I've really only finalized one so far. But
it's the one that's gonna get nominated for the Oscar next year.
Who knows? I got a nice streak going here.
So you do, man. You do. Tell everybody about some of the you've picked some award winning shorts before anybody got to see them. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the first year we had a short animated film called Feral. That was pretty wild. The year after that, we had a live action film called Butter Lamp out of China, I believe, which is a very surreal, kind of strange, funny little film. And last year we played World of Tomorrow, which should have won the Oscar.
Should have, yes.
And almost did. I mean, it had a lot of momentum. I was really hoping for it. That was the one thing I was most, anticipating for the whole night. Yeah. And I thought, this might be the chance. We have an Academy Award-winning film at our festival. We can play that up.
Yeah.
And it went to Bear Story. so very disappointing.
Yeah.
Pick some good ones.
Okay. All right. Well, mark your calendars. May 20th through the 26th at the Music Box Theater. Go to musicboxtheater.com for your festival passes. $150, and that'll get you to everything. More exciting stuff will be announced. All right, Eric, Colin, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We got to take a little break here. When we come back after the news, we will jump into the new movie reviews. And we got a bunch of new movies to talk about. We'll talk about the box office, and then Eric will do a final summation of his experiences at the South by Southwest Film Festival. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday morning, and that means my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. It's Monday morning, and that means it's Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress and Colin Suter are with me to review the new movies. And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. And Colin, welcome back.
Hello there.
Okay. Now, first of all, let me just say this. Why am I the only one that saw the damn Divergent movie?
Because you didn't hate the last one.
No, I didn't hate the last one.
Exactly.
But I didn't like it.
So that was close enough.
Oh man.
I didn't exactly. I mean, I thought the second one was better than the first one, but I think at this time, it's like, why do we have to keep going to see this? It's not like the third one is going to just blow our minds and make us reassess the whole thing.
Right.
So why not stay home and watch something better on Netflix?
I can assure you. I know we're going to get to that. Trust me. We're going to get to that. I can assure you that it won't change your mind about the series. I got to tell you, I've seen all three of these movies. I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know what's going on. I really don't. I will say this. It's not terrible, and I didn't think the last one was terrible either. I didn't like the first one at all. I thought the second one was okay. This is kind of like the same thing. But it really, there's just nothing interesting about the characters. There's no, suspense. I will say this. There's some nicely done action scenes. The special effects are very good. But I got to say this. It's got an incredible cast of really, really, really bored people. I mean, just like Shailene Woodley is like, yeah, what? I mean, you could just like every line reading that she has or every look that she has to the camera, the subtext is, please let this end quickly. I mean, that's the, and there's, some really incredible actors in this movie. And they all, like Naomi Watts is in it, Jeff Daniels, and I don't know. I find it really funny and weird that the movie takes place in like a, futuristic Chicago. And they do some interesting things with the special effects in that regard. But if you've seen the other two, you've seen this one. And I really don't see the need for this thing to be 4 hours long, and split into two movies. When it was over, I was like, it wasn't like when I saw Reloaded and when Reloaded ended, I wanted the next one immediately, This, mm-hmm. I don't care.
I had no idea there were. I did not know they were splitting this up into two parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, we have one more.
Part one. They don't put the part one at the end like they usually do.
Because they changed it. They actually, it was named Allegiant Part 1 and Allegiant Part 2, and then when they realized that no one wanted to see that anymore, they gave the fourth movie its own title.
Yeah, it's got some weird.
There's only three books.
There's
Okay.
It's got some weird title to it though. Like they made up
a Thunder.
What's it called?
Asunder. I don't know. I don't care.
Oh, well, it could be. I mean, that sounds like a reasonable. That sounds like a reasonable title for these movies. So anyway, listen. If there's, I guess they're made $29 million over the weekend, but that's not very. That's not a lot of money.
No, it's bad.
Yeah,
bad.
So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But you guys, congratulations on not seeing it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure.
That's fantastic. Yeah. All right,
doing our part.
Yeah. All right. Well, Colin, tell us about Creative Control.
All right. Well, I did see this. So this is a little indie film starring no one you've ever heard of. And it stars, a writer and director, a guy named Benjamin Dickinson. And the film takes place, as the synopsis says, 5 minutes into the future. And Dickinson plays an ad executive who is assigned to create an ad for a new augmented reality OS, I guess, that could take over the computer tech industry. Dickinson lives with his girlfriend, but has a crush on a model who works with a photographer friend, and they kind of have an affair going on as it is. But Dickinson is really obsessed with this new technology that he is able to create a virtual reality version of this model girl that he has a crush on. He can have sex with it and communicate with it, and it gets to the point where he can't tell the difference between the reality and the illusion, and that's where his life starts to fall apart, on top of which being an alcoholic and now a drug addict. A very intriguing premise. You'd be right to think it's kind of like, and it's in black and white, so you'd be right into thinking it's kind of like Manhattan meets Her, and it's certainly Her is the model that he's going for in terms of, you know, the kind of futuristic film it is and the kind of story that it's telling.
By the way, Colin, it's interesting that you mentioned Manhattan because I'm looking at the IMDb page and it's got the big ad surrounding the back of it.
Yeah.
And it's got a quote from Woody Allen.
Yeah, very interesting. yeah. I noticed that too.
It's a very funny and original movie, Woody Allen.
Yeah, I wish I agreed with him. I mean, it is a very interesting premise, and the cinematography is beautiful. It's a really well-shot, beautiful film. Unfortunately, it's populated by characters that I just didn't give a crap about. I mean, this guy, this Benjamin Dickinson, I know he tried really hard to, you know, shop the movie around and get people to star in it and everything, and he just got fed up and just did it himself. Just plays the most unlikable character, you know, this is the most unsympathetic, whiny character that I've come across in a long time that I just didn't care about his problems. It's like Manhattan meets Her, but without any heart or soul, is what it feels like. Mm. It has a good premise, but I think it wastes it on the stupid love triangle story when it could be using it for something a little more cerebral, a little more interesting, and a little less obvious with its message about where technology is taking us and, you know, the artificial intelligence impeding on our relationships. I mean, we've seen this before. So, you know, this is kind of an annoying and slog through a movie that should have been very intriguing, could have been this year's Ex Machina, but it's instead something, you know, a little less interesting and quite frankly annoying.
Okay.
So.
All right, that's Creative Control. All right. Eric, tell us about Hello, My Name is Doris. It's a movie that I'm very intrigued about. It's the first time Sally Field's been in a movie in a long time.
Yeah.
And then it's directed by Michael Showalter.
Yeah. Michael Showalter, who's directed a few movies, a former member of the State, pops up in a lot of David Wayne's films. And this film premiered at the South by Southwest Film Festival last year. And it stars Sally Field as a woman in her 60s who works works in an office building, I think, like a clothing department or something. One day, their new boss, head of the department, is played by Max Greenfield from New Girl.
Right.
And she sort of instantly develops a bit of a crush on him. So she begins sort of fantasizing about being with him and him falling in love with her. Meanwhile, and then she gets her, I can't remember if it's her niece or her best friend's kid, to sort of kind of like start cyber stalking him a little bit, start doing a little Facebook and Twitter, finding out what kind of music he likes and going to those concerts and dressing all fancy and hippish and stuff. And it's a film that is, it feels that sort of schizophrenic in a way, in that you have Sally Field giving a really genuine performance in this movie. Like, Sally Field really giving her all, putting everything she possibly can into this character, who is too often stuck in what seems like sitcom-like situations. When the film actually steers into the reality part of it and stays away from the fantasy and some of the more ludicrous aspects of how she's trying to win this guy over, it's actually kind of sweet and poignant. And like I said, Sally Field's really good. Max Greenfield is also good in the movie. His character's a little bit underwritten and a little too oblivious to what Sally Field's character, Doris, is doing around him. But the two of them have good chemistry, and Tyne Daly is in this movie too, who plays Sally Field's best friend, and she's also very good in the movie. But it never quite got over that hump. It never quite gets over to that part, and it's basically because of the screenplay, because the performances in the movie are worth looking at. But it's, again, it's sort of the service of a screenplay that just doesn't really have it, basically. So it's kind of a disappointment.
All right. It is playing at a few theaters around, and it's at the River East. It's at the Arclight in Lincoln Park, Century in Evanston, the Renaissance Place in Highland Park, and the Lincolnshire Stadium 21 in IMAX. But it's not in IMAX. I was going to say, that would be pretty interesting to see a romantic comedy
I'm looking over the cast list again because I couldn't remember that some of these people were even in the movie. See, Kyle Mooney is in the movie. I don't remember it, but that's probably why it's bad.
Oh, come on, man.
Dude, come on. You're a Kyle Mooney defender?
I am a Beck Bennett and Kyle Mooney defender.
I like Beck Bennett. Kyle Mooney is just like SNL cancer.
Well, you know what's really funny was when Jonah Hill was on a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And during the opening monologue, when they do the questions from the audience and stuff,
yeah,
Kyle Mooney stands up and goes, "Yeah, you're really why you're not even in a movie? Why are you here?" And Jonah Hill goes, "Oh yeah, that's right. You're Kyle Mooney. You're that new guy. I love your little video shorts that you do. It just makes me remember how much I miss Andy Samberg."
Yes. and speaking of Woody Allen, if you want to see maybe the worst Woody Allen impression I've ever seen, you see the Ariana Grande episode last week where he's on Family Feud.
Yeah, I did. I saw it.
Ooh.
I saw it.
Ooh,
she did an amazing Jennifer Lawrence.
She was good.
I mean,
yeah,
the whole show was good. But that Jennifer Lawrence was like, what?
Yeah.
So, all right, guys, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Childress and Colin Suter are here, and we're talking about the movies. And we'll get back to the movie reviews coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. when Steve Grzanich and the opening bell begins. And at 6 o'clock, it is Steve Cochran. We're reviewing the new movies. It's Monday morning, and that's what we do. And we got Eric and we got Colin here and a few more movies to talk about. And welcome back, Eric. Welcome back, Colin.
Thank you. Hello.
All right. Colin, tell us about Eye in the Sky.
All right. Well, this is a thriller starring Helen Mirren as a military officer who is in command of a possible drone strike that'll take place that has the potential to take out some high-ranking terrorists in Kenya. She calls the shots from a military bunker, while Alan Rickman's character, another high-ranking military official, consults with British military personnel.
Is this Alan? Is this
another location?
Is this Rickman's last movie?
It's his last on-screen performance.
Because
he's the voice in the new Alice in Wonderland film. Okay. That'll be the last thing he does. But okay, this is his last on-screen performance.
Okay.
So we also see the story from the point of view of the soldiers who have to press the buttons to fire the missiles into the village where these terrorists are. That's played by Aaron Paul and Phoebe Fox. Meanwhile, the eyes and ears on the ground that is helping everyone navigate the situation is a disguise. You know, he's disguised as a villager with a tiny little drone camera that's, you know, kind of like a flying insect. That's played by Arkad Abdi from Captain Phillips, the Oscar nominee from Captain Phillips. So mainly this is a situation room thriller where the situation gets complicated when an innocent girl walks into a deadly or potentially deadly bombing area that could kill her if she doesn't move. But none of the high-ranking officials want to, you know, make the tough decision of whether or not to go ahead and go through with the bombing and risk killing one girl if it also means killing these suicide bombers who will do a lot more damage if their plan is carried out. So it's a lot of everybody's trying to pass the decision on to somebody else who's higher ranking and have them make the decision, and they get the decision thrown back at them. And I'm sure this sort of thing goes on all the time. Directed by Gavin Hood, you know, who's got not the greatest track record in the world, but I actually thought this was a pretty effective thriller, just strictly on a surface level. You know, it doesn't really have a whole lot to say about, you know, the role of drone strikes and the cost of, you know, civilian life or anything like that. It tries to have a little message at the end. It goes a little heavy-handed at the end, particularly the end credits. But it's carried by a very good cast. You know, Helen Mirren is terrific in it. Aaron Paul and Phoebe Fox, I thought, were very, very good. And, yeah, it is the last on-screen performance of Alan Rickman, and he is given some really great moments in the film. In fact, his final moment in the film is a great send-off for him. It's a great Alan Rickman moment that only he could do. So, you know, it's the kind of movie you watch, you go, gee, I wish Paul Greengrass had directed this, or, you know, I wish this could be the Dr. Strangelove about, you know, you know, drone strikes and the role of drones in our lives and everything. But it's not. It's kind of misses that opportunity. But just as a strictly as a surface level thriller, I thought it worked. And so I would recommend it.
Okay. All right. Eric, what about you?
I'm not a fan. Colin hit upon a couple things about the movie that sort of typify why I think the film doesn't really work. For one, I think the movie, particularly personified by the end credits that he mentions, does think that it's actually offering something more to the discussion of the table of discussion for drone strikes that like we haven't heard before. And really, you know, if you take drones out of the equation, it really isn't that much different than, you know, any number of war films or thrillers in the past that have had those situations where collateral damage gets in the way of someone having to, you know, do their job or make a difficult decision. And it's basically sort of stretched out over the course of almost 2 hours. And then the other thing that I thought, and I saw this movie at Toronto, you know, well before Rickman passed away. So I didn't have that, you know, the same experience, you know, watching him, you know, him walk off,
yeah,
you know, basically.
Yeah.
But when I was watching the film, what I found interesting in one respect and off-putting in the other is that Rickman seems to think he's doing Dr. Strangelove. And everyone else in the film thinks they're doing something really uber serious. And it was very off-putting. Because you're watching, you know, Helen Mirren, who almost seems like she's almost going for borderline parody sometimes, but I couldn't quite tell what direction Gavin Hood was giving all these actors at any given time. Is he trying to have it both ways? Is he trying to go for comedy? Clearly, you know, this side of the room got one direction, and this side of the room got a completely different direction, and the two of them completely don't mesh at all. So I found the scenes of it, you know, when it was actually, you know, becoming a thriller, just very hollow, and didn't really care what happened to anyone, and I don't think it was really saying anything interesting about who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, you know, is this, you know, are they bombing the right people, are they going to save people, or, you know, are they just going to kill the wrong people, you know, at the right time? It's one of these movies that wants to say so many things, but really ends up saying nothing at all.
Okay, all right. I haven't seen it. I mean, I'm curious. The one thing that made me hesitate squeezing it in this weekend is because it is directed by this Gavin Hood guy.
Director of X-Men Origins Wolverine. People.
I know that. I realize that.
Yes.
It's playing at River East. It's playing at the Century Center Cinema on Clark and in Evanston. But you know, I went to the movies over the weekend, a few times this weekend, but I went to see, my parents and I went to go see, my parents hadn't seen it, so we went to go see Zootopia because they wanted to see it. And at the theater that we went to, the theater in Skokie that we went to, there were posters for Eye in the Sky as coming soon. Are they going to open this wider?
I think there is a plan, yes.
Oh, okay.
Not like exceptionally wide, but I think they're just sort of platforming a little bit. I think it opened in New York and L.A. last week.
Yeah, it did.
And now it's, yeah, Chicago this week. And I think the plan is to open it a little bit further, but I don't know if the grosses justify that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit.
I mean, there's nothing art housey about it. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, interesting. Eric, Colin, hang on. We got a break here for the news, and when we come back, we will review more movies, and we'll talk box office, and then Eric will give us his final wrap-up of his trip to Austin at the South by Southwest Film Festival. Okay, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's Monday. We're here till 5 o'clock, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5, and then Steve Grzanich in the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6. My dad will be calling in to tell a joke because it's Monday, so that means it's a jokey time. We have another very disappointing Blackhawks Express to play back. That's all coming up. And more fun stuff. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and more. They join me every Monday morning to review the weekend's movies and all that cool stuff. So they are here right now, and let's bring Eric and Colin back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, Eric, tell us about The Bronze.
Okay. Well, this is a film that actually co-opened the Sundance Film Festival in 2015. It stars Melissa Rauch from The Big Bang Theory as a gymnast whose claim to fame is winning a bronze in the Olympics. And she's basically lived off of this fame pretty much ever since. She lives at home with her dad, played by Gary Cole. She watches VHS tapes of her performance and winning the medal over and over and over. And she's a foul-mouthed, very unpleasant person. And then she gets called out to help mentor a new gymnast on the scene for the next Olympics. And needless to say, she doesn't take to that very well and actually goes about its points trying to actually sabotage her success. And there are other people involved, including an old classmate played by Silicon Valley's Thomas Middleditch, and a fellow gymnast that she used to hang with, played by the Winter Soldier himself, Sebastian Stan. So it sounds like it's a film ripe for a really great or just a really good R-rated, you know, sort of raunchy comedy. And this movie just fails in every single regard. You know, it's one thing to have a character who's completely unpleasant and unlikable, but they at least have to be funny. And this character isn't. And that just makes all of her flaws and, you know, all of her infamy all the more unbearable to sit through, particularly, you know, when you have some decent people around her, like Gary Cole, who is a bit wasted in this movie, unfortunately. Thomas Middleditch basically plays the same character he does in all the movies, including Silicon Valley. The only sort of highlight of this entire movie is this ridiculous acrobatic sex scene that in the movie that, you know, if you'd just be better off watching something like Team America, frankly, because it's actually much funnier. You see people who know how to do satire, with the South Park guys. Melissa Rauch co-wrote the film with her husband, I believe, and this movie is just an absolute chore to sit through. Bad comedies usually are, unpleasant comedies even more so.
You know, I didn't hate it as much as you did, but it's definitely not worth seeing. There were things about it that I will say that I laughed a few times during the film, and you're absolutely right. She is an incredibly unlikable character, but I don't mind that if you get laughs out of it. And, you know, I mean,
right.
Unpleasant characters can be great.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I think she has moments in the movie. I think there are moments in the movie that make me laugh. Gary Cole, you're right, doesn't really get to do as much, but he's great every time he's on screen. you know, there's no question about it. And you get to see, like, first of all, Craig Kilborn's in this movie. What the hell happened to him?
He lost The Daily Show, and then that was it.
I just don't know what, I mean, I, you know, like, that guy has disappeared.
Pretty much,
he's in this. And I was like, what? When he showed up. There are a few laughs in it, and it is, you know, but it the thing that, Eric, that you mentioned is that it's raunchy, but it's not raunchy in the way that seems like natural.
Right.
It's very forced raunch. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, well, this is the kind of movie that the kids like now. You know, so let's do this. And here, you know, there are the required bodily fluid jokes. There are the required, you know, the required raunchiness, the required bad language, the required look how cute and little and innocent this person looks, but is really awful.
Yeah,
there's all that stuff. Now, I don't know Melissa Rauch. Is she like a regular character on The Big Bang Theory? Because I don't
watch.
She's
that. One of the girlfriends.
She is. Okay.
She's like the really mousy. She's got glasses and very tight sweaters.
Oh, okay. So she's playing like the nerdy sort of mousy character.
Yes.
So is this like her trying to like blow that image out of the water? Because it's what it seems like.
I guess. I mean, she co-wrote the movie, and I don't know if that's really an image that she needs to have blown per se.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, if you didn't know that's who that was, you might think, you know, find her unrecognizable.
That was my case. I don't, because I don't watch The Big Bang Theory. I can't.
Me neither.
I can't get through it. I've tried to watch it
a few
times. It's a terrible show. So I had no idea who this girl was when I saw the movie. I saw her, you know, she got a writing credit on it. I just didn't know who she was. And then when you mentioned that she was on The Big Bang Theory, I kind of looked her up. And it just seems to me like an obvious attempt for somebody who's on a sitcom. And I didn't know she played the mousy character, but that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Trying desperately to break that image or to be as raunchy as possible. And it doesn't quite work. I did have a few. There were a few laughs in the movie, I thought. Cecily Strong is in it, for God's sake, so that right there is always a plus.
Better than Kyle Mooney.
Well, yeah, she is. She's one of the best cast members on the show right now. But anyway, I didn't hate it. I also am not recommending it. This is one of those movies that if it's on at like 1 o'clock in the morning on cable in a year, I might just have it on in the background.
I might watch that sex scene again, but that's about it.
Okay. All right. Colin, you didn't see it, right?
Nope.
No. Okay.
Nope.
All right. Okay. We got one more movie to review, and then, Eric, we're going to have you hang on.
Yeah.
And you will come back, and we'll talk about the box office for the weekend and your Sundance, your South by Southwest.
One of them.
Experience, yeah. Now, are you guys going to make it out to my next film club?
Raging Bull?
Raging Bull.
Going to try to.
Okay.
I may have a commitment that night.
All right. It's April 5th, Tuesday, April 5th, Raging Bull, one of the greatest American films ever made. And, so we're going to show that on the big screen. Only $10 to get in, and we'll have a really good time. If you've never seen Raging Bull, it's amazing. Have you guys seen it on the big screen?
No.
I never have.
Oh, man.
I really want to go.
Oh, man. The Chapman cinematography alone, man, is...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean... I remember seeing it. The first time I saw it was at the Water Tower Theater.
Yeah.
They used to have theaters at the Water Tower Place.
Yep.
And so I saw it there the first time, and then I saw it at the Gateway a couple of times on the northwest side of Chicago.
And plus, I keep forgetting how to make a steak, and I think that movie's got some good advice.
Yeah. Don't overcook it. It defeats its own purpose. It's the greatest cooking tip of all time. Oh, it's like a piece. Oh, bring it over. It's like a piece of charcoal. I've seen this movie 8,000 times, and you know, you remember when De Niro did Midnight Run? Of course, that's, you know,
yeah.
What am I, Chris Farley? You remember?
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. But so when it came out, I remember people were like, "Oh man, you know, this is a comedy. De Niro can't do comedy," you know, and I'm like, I'd like to point out how absolutely hilarious. There are scenes in Raging Bull that are hilarious, between him and Pesci.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I mean there's some really funny stuff in the movie, and you know, and I always knew that he could do comedy. I didn't know that
king of comedy.
Yeah, well, that's not necessarily a comedy though.
I know, but funny and creepy in it.
He's very funny and creepy in it, which, and I always thought it was hysterical that that was their follow-up to Raging Bull.
Yeah.
I always thought it was like, what are you doing? What the hell are you guys doing?
I'll show ordinary people.
Yeah. I'll show ordinary people. I'll make one of the most uncomfortable films ever made.
That's right.
We celebrated that last week with the 90th birthday of Jerry Lewis, who is remarkable in that movie. Yeah. So anyway, but Raging Bull on the big screen, it's going to be great. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. It's at the Movieco Theater in Rosemont, Tuesday, August 5th. Get your tickets now, and we hope to see everybody out there. And you can reserve your seats right now at Movieco.com, M-U-V-I-C-O, M-U-V-I-C-O, Movieco.com. Only $10. Parking is free. Raging Bull on the big screen. It's going to be a very special night. Okay, before we – let's see. We got okay, we're going to take a break right now. I'm sorry. I was just looking at my producer because he knows what's going on and I don't. So, but we are going to take a break. And then when we come back, there's this little movie that debuted on Netflix over the weekend. And I got to say this. I don't know what the numbers are on Netflix, you guys,
right,
in terms of, like, rating. Everybody I know watched it over the weekend. Everybody. So I don't know if they held records for, like, first watched, you know, movies or whatever. But everybody I know watched it over the weekend, and we'll tell you all about it. Eric, hang on. And Colin, hang on. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Pee-wee's Big Holiday. So we're going to have a good time with that. All right, we'll take a break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Hi. The Monday morning movie reviews continue right here on 720 WGN. We'll talk about box office with Eric Childress, and he'll give us his final wrap-up of the films that he saw at the South by Southwest Film Festival. But right now we got to review a brand new Pee-wee Herman movie, Pee-wee's Big Holiday. And I have been really, really looking forward to this movie and was very excited. It premiered on Netflix. It's not in theaters. It is only on Netflix. And hopefully you all subscribe to Netflix. I know everybody I know has Netflix. And but that's where you can see it. You can't see it in the theaters. It's only on Netflix. So it's Pee-wee's Big Holiday. And Colin, why don't you tell us about it?
All right. Well, yep, he's back. And even though Paul Reubens is 63 years old, yes, Pee-wee Herman himself hasn't aged much. He lives in a small town of Bearville that has, and he's never really left. He's never been outside the border of Fairville. He has a bit of a Truman Show-like existence where he works as a short order cook in the local diner. And one day he gets paid a visit from Joe Manganiello, playing himself. For those who don't know, he's on True Blood and How I Met Your Mother. And he has a lot in common with Pee-wee, and he encourages him to get out and see the world. And he invites Pee-wee to his big birthday party in New York, which is in a few days. So Pee-wee sets out on a road trip and has, much like in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, has run-ins with all kinds of crazy characters, including female bank robbers, the Amish, a weird sort of cultish farmhouse where a father has 12 daughters who he'll marry off to Pee-wee at the drop of a hat. He just has to pick one. So, and many more. It's really all about Pee-wee seeing the world for the first time and trying to make it to New York in time for the birthday party. And the movie doesn't really acknowledge Pee-wee's Big Adventure at all. I guess it didn't exist. And it makes a point of not acknowledging through actually acknowledging Big Top Pee-wee in a weird sort of way. So, it actually has pretty much follows the exact same structure as Big Top Pee-wee. It opens with a dream sequence. It opens with him waking up in the morning and having these kind of Rube Goldberg contraptions throughout his house and throughout the neighborhood, actually. And it pretty much gives you kind of a reworking or reboot of Big Adventure in the same way Force Awakens kind of redid A New Hope. And I'm okay with that. This is a fun, a really just delightful Pee-wee Herman movie that works, you know, even though, like I said, Paul Reubens is 63 years old. And I was a little skeptical going in, like, is he really going to be able to pull this off? I mean, and he does. I mean, his voice is a little different, it's a little deeper now. He can't, you know, hit some of the same notes as he used to.
Well, he does hit a particularly high note. It's not him, but he does hit a particularly high note throughout this movie.
Yes, he does. This is not a case of I wish the movie didn't premiere on Netflix, because I would love to watch this film with a crowd. I'd love to watch this in a theater.
Yeah,
it's got a lot of great funny gags that, you know, just had me laughing for a long time. But I'm laughing by myself, you know. And you know, Judd Apatow co-produced this film with Paul Reubens, so there's clearly his influence is basically the bromance between Pee Wee Herman and Joe Manganiello. And it is the bromance of the year. It's a lot of fun to watch these two. This was highly recommended. I watched it twice over the weekend. I will watch it many more times.
Okay. All right. Eric, go ahead.
I hope people didn't leave the house to go to see a movie this weekend, because the best movie was on their Netflix queue. Pee-wee's Big Holiday, I had an absolute blast watching. Like Colin, I didn't know what to expect from this thing. I know, you know, with, you know, Apatow's involvement, that, you know, that they were going to, you know, do something with, clearly have a lot of respect for the character. And that's the one thing that struck me really early on about this movie, is that it really reminded me a lot of what Jason Segel did with the Muppets.
Yep.
And that he, they get the character, they get, you know, what makes him funny, they get what makes him sweet. And then, you know, like Colin said, it might be Pee-wee's Big Adventure in a way all over again, but it's a slightly more grown-up Big Adventure. So now he's going from adventure to holiday, and it's, you know, it's little vignettes with all these characters that he meets along the way. It seems everyone has their own personal favorite of which one is the best. Mm-hmm. My personal favorite is the farmhouse sequence. I laugh from every joke in that farmhouse sequence with the farmer's daughters hit home. It's an old joke, but the way they did it, I thought was beautiful and funny. And I had a lot of that during the movie. You know, every vignette has its own pleasures and charms. The snake farm is just weird, and, you know, has a hilarious payoff. Joe Manganiello is great in this movie. He is really funny, and it's the second movie I've seen this year, I'm not going to say what the other one is, that actually, it might be the new trend in cameos where a character, someone shows up and you think they're playing a character, and then you find out 5 minutes in they're actually playing themselves. There's another movie like that actually has an even funnier payoff that way. But Manganiello in the beginning of this thing and towards the end at the actual birthday party, I laughed all the way through this thing, had a big smile on my face throughout the entire thing. I was texting people saying, you have to watch this immediately. This is, I can't think of a funnier movie I've seen this year so far.
Okay. All right, hang on, because we got to take a break, and we'll come back in, and I'll give you my thoughts on Pee-wee's Big Holiday. Hang on, guys. And, yeah, Pee-wee's Big Holiday, available only on Netflix. Available only on Netflix. Eric and Colin both loved it, and I will give you my review right after we take this break on 720 WGN. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, reviewing the new movies, and we're going to talk box office and with Eric. And, of course, he will tell us a little bit more about his adventures in Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival. My dad will call in to tell a joke a little bit later on, because it's a jokey time, but let's get back to the reviews. Before the news, Eric and Colin gave you their reviews of the new Pee-wee Herman movie, Pee-wee's Big Holiday, which premiered on Netflix, is only available on Netflix, and they both really liked it. And so welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, I echo everything you guys said. I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. I will say this. There's there is kind of a difference in tone between Big Holiday and Big Adventure. And I think that there's a little bit missing here. And I'm being very, very nitpicky. And it's the voice of Tim Burton. The combination of what Paul Reubens does and Tim Burton's vision and voice was just the combination of that for Pee-wee's Big Adventure is spectacular, if you know what I mean. And that sort of underlying subversive weird quality is not in this movie at all, and I kind of miss that. You know what I mean? Because there's just, I mean, the combination of Rubens and Burton, nobody will ever be able to top that. And you know, but having said that, there's so you know, the voice of Tim Burton is missing here. It's not a huge hole, but there's just another level that Pee-wee's Big Adventure works on that Pee-wee's Big Holiday doesn't. Now, having got that out of the way, this is great. It's hilarious. There are huge laughs in it. I do want to mention that Eric, you mentioned that Jason Segel, you know, bringing the Muppets back.
Yeah.
Well, this seems to me like it's obviously produced by Apatow, but this is Paul Rust, who is also responsible for one of the most entertaining things on Netflix right now, a series called Love. With him, he's the co-creator of it. He wrote a lot of the episodes. He was in it with the great Gillian Jacobs. And if you've not seen Love on Netflix, you should. There's two reasons to subscribe to Netflix right now: this and Love, and they both involve Paul Rust, who to me, and he also appears in the movie very
briefly.
Yeah, very briefly. He's in the diner, but I gotta say, it's the same thing that went through my head, Eric. I'm not kidding you. While I was watching this, I'm like, "Boy, Paul Rust really, really likes Pee-wee as much as Jason Segel likes and respects the Muppets."
Yep.
And that's what it felt like to me. I laughed consistently through the whole thing from the very opening scene. I was just there were times when I was in tears. I was laughing so hard. The I wish I could have seen. I wanted to see his group. when they come in and break up in the back
of
the
time. Come on, man, it's got Clovis.
Yeah, I know it's hilarious. So just that there's so many original and weird and funny concepts in this, and it's a really delightful movie on every level. Now everybody picks their favorite section. Okay, Eric, you went with the farmer's daughter section.
Yep.
Colin, what was your favorite?
Probably the Amish.
Me too.
Just one gag in the Amish that goes on for a long time.
The balloon gag.
Yeah.
I was almost peeing myself. I was laughing so hard, and it just did not end. And it was all one take. It was all done in one take. And I mean, you know, I laughed consistently throughout the entire movie. I happen to be I'm a huge Pee-wee Herman fan. I thought Pee-wee's Playhouse was one of the greatest shows ever. We used to tape it every Saturday morning and then watch it every Saturday night at my friend Joe's house. It was just a weekly thing that we did. I've got all of them, you know, I've got all the episodes on, I got them on VHS, so I'm going to have to change that to DVD soon at some point. But I've got them. I haven't watched them in a long time, obviously. But I thought the TV show was spectacular. I Big Top Pee-wee was really bad. And I, you know, I'm glad that, you know, that it's not really acknowledged here. But, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure is one of my favorite movies of all time. And this is just, it's absolutely a delight. Now, if anybody likes Pee-wee Herman, if anybody thinks Pee-wee is funny, without question, you have to get Netflix and you have to see this. Now, I had read somewhere, Eric, that in fact, this might get a small theatrical release.
Going forward now?
I'm sorry?
Going forward now?
That's what I had read. I had read that it's going to come out on Netflix, and then I guess in a couple of theaters in some of the big cities.
I didn't read that. I mean, I was kind of surprised that it went to Netflix to begin with, because this was sort of a big, you know, project announcement like a year ago, whenever that, you know, Apatow was going to make, you know, work with Paul Rubens to make this Pee-wee movie.
Yeah.
So I just naturally assumed that it was going to go to theaters, and then I didn't really hear anything about it until January when South by Southwest announced that they were playing it, and I got all excited for that. And then I found out that they weren't actually premiering the film until Thursday night.
Yeah.
So one, like, hours before it hits Netflix,
right,
they premiered it.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, so anyway, you can see it on Netflix, and it's highly, highly, highly recommended. It is delightful and really, really funny. And I just love the character, and I love Paul Rubens. And I just really liked it very much. And the guy who directed it is a guy named John Lee, who's done a lot of really funny TV work. He's worked on a lot of very funny and creative shows, some of the funnier stuff that's on TV right now, including he's one of the directors on many Broad City episodes as well. So there's got that sort of very hip, what's funny today kind of feel to it. The only thing, and again, my only, and it's a very, very small criticism, only because I love Pee-wee's Big Adventure so much, I really do miss that Tim Burton-esque element to it. You know, he's not quite his. The character is not quite as like in Big Adventure. There is a very subversive feel to Pee-wee. There are times when Pee-wee can be like sort of mean and dark and judgmental, and that's not in this movie at all. You know what I mean? And
I think there is a little bit. You know, when the guy says, "Oh, Pee-wee, your cooking drives me crazy." Yeah, it's not a long trip, but thanks.
Yeah, I know.
There's a little of that in the film.
Yeah, I know. But yeah. Anyway, whatever. You mentioned how do you pronounce Joe? How do you pronounce his last name?
Manganiello.
Yeah, Manganiello. He's hysterical. Yeah. He's hysterical from the first moment he walks in and orders the chocolate shake. He's hysterical through the entire thing. So anyway, Pee Wee's Big Holiday. It's awesome. All right, what do we got next week? We got that stupid Batman movie next week.
Yeah, it's secret week next week. We got Batman versus Superman: Dawn of Justice.
Right.
And My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2.
Oh man.
So that's the one you're going to be seeing, Nick. I assume.
Man. I probably will end up seeing it. I mean, I hated the first one. I know I'm in the minority, but I didn't like the first movie, the Big Fat Greek Wedding. But, you know, I go to a movie with my parents every week.
Yeah.
And they don't want to sit through a 2-hour and 40-minute Batman Superman movie. But I'm sure that they'll be fine with the Greek Wedding movie.
Probably.
You know, it's my parents. They're in their 70s, so they'll probably think it's pretty funny. So.
Yeah.
Or you could take them to Creesha.
Creesha.
Oh, Creesha. Yeah, take your Creesha.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's from Colin. That's a gift from Colin and me.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to do that. All right. Well, listen, Eric, you hang on.
Okay.
Colin will let you get to sleep.
All right.
And because you've got minds to warp.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Is it just me, or does it seem that Skittles commercial with Steven Tyler?
Oh my God!
I've got minds to warp and values. He hasn't done that in about. He hasn't warped minds or values in about 35 years.
No, and I can't wait to hear him badmouth U2 for some of their decisions again.
Yeah.
Skittles commercial.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah. It's a rock and roll there.
Well, he lost all credibility when he lost all credibility. Well, as soon as he recorded the song for Armageddon, it was done. As far as I'm concerned.
I think before that.
But I mean, at that point, it was like, oh, yeah, boy, these guys have sucked longer than they were good. And then, like, he's, you know, on American Idol. It's like, come on, man.
They were in Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Yeah, they were in that, but so was everybody. Everybody was in that movie. Steve Martin was in it at the height of his popularity.
That's true.
So, all right. All right, Colin, thanks, man.
All righty.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, there you go. We'll talk to Colin next week. Now, Eric...
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk box office first. As I mentioned, I went to see Zootopia again over the weekend, this time with my folks, and they loved it, by the way.
Yeah,
and
excellent.
I can't explain to you how hard my dad was laughing during the sloth scene.
Oh,
I can't even explain.
That's the funniest scene of the year. Without question.
It's hysterical. Now, ultimately, though, you know, I didn't mention this last, I forgot to mention this a couple of weeks ago, but it's ultimately... It's a Bob and Ray bit. Bob and Ray did this bit because when Bob Elliott died a few weeks ago, we played a bunch of clips. And one of them was Bob and Ray. Bob was the member of this. Ray was, no, sorry. Yeah, it was Bob who was the member of this very slow speaking society.
Mm-hmm.
And it was essentially him taking forever to say something and, you know, Ray continuously getting more frustrated and finishing his sentences.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what they did here. I'm telling you though, and the you know, it's just hysterical. But my point is, Zootopia made $38 million over the weekend. It was number one at the box office again.
Yeah.
It was packed when we went. Packed. Yeah. And I was like, man, this thing, we went on a Saturday, it's the third weekend. We went on Saturday at like 5 p.m. to see it. It was playing in like 2 theaters, I think, or 3. And it was there wasn't an empty seat in the house.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, listen, Eric, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric will do a little summary of the box office, and then Eric will give us his final reviews and thoughts on what he saw at the South by Southwest Film Festival. Right now, though, we'll break. We got some weather. We got some traffic, and I'll give you the weather right now. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And welcome back to the show. My dad's going to be calling in to tell a jokey time. And, of course, we'll hear the Blackhawks Express Another very disappointing Blackhawks loss. But right now we're talking box office, and we'll get some final thoughts on the South by Southwest Film Festival with Eric. Okay, Eric, let's go through the numbers real quick here. Zootopia, mm-hmm. What's going on with that? Is that any kind of, is it $201 million in 3 weeks? That's pretty great.
It's fantastic, and this week a lot of kids are on spring break, so the weekday numbers are going to be very solid. Mm-hmm. And next week, even though it's got, you know, the Batman, Superman, there's still no other family films out there in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So this thing is just going to cruise past through Easter.
And it's great, too. You know,
yeah.
That
feeds into it as well.
Yeah. The Divergent series, Allegiant, made $29 million. Is that the least of the three?
By far.
Okay.
Yeah, the first two movies did 54 and 52. And, back when the original came out a couple years ago, it was originally just going to be the three movies, just like the three books. And I think it was like 3-4 weeks into the release of the first movie that Lionsgate decided, we're going to split the last movie into two parts. And everyone was just like, oh, the greed. And I'm like, no, this isn't greed. This is defense.
Yeah.
That they're playing right now, because they're seeing that this movie is not making Hunger Games or even Twilight type money.
Yeah.
So they're going to, milk every possible penny they possibly can out of this just to save their asses.
Yeah. Okay. Number three was Miracles from Heaven with $15 million over the weekend. And that sounds about right.
Yeah, that's a good number for it, actually. Sort of the interesting thing about this movie, if you're familiar with what CinemaScore is, this survey, that's a
right.
random survey that goes out
right.
in theaters around the country. The movie actually got an A+.
Wow.
And it's only the 29th movie since 2002 to actually get an A+. And so that's, obviously that's rare company. Of course, Tyler Perry's gotten a couple A+s
right.
and a lot of Pixar movies get A+s. So, it basically means that people are going to continue to show up
right.
for it. So you're probably going to see this thing go over $60 million. It's got the Easter holiday coming up.
Right.
So it's going to continue to draw a crowd for several weeks.
Okay. Number four, 10 Cloverfield Lane, $12.5 million, bringing its total to $45 million. That didn't cost much though, did it?
No, I think it's something like $15 million or something
that,
or
okay.
$13 million. Yeah.
Right.
So it's going to be a solid profit
yep.
for.
Now, have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it yet.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I'm hoping to make time this week.
Yeah. Let me know when you see it, because Goodman rules.
I will.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up a little bit here. We got a few minutes. What are some titles that you didn't tell us about yet that you saw at South by Southwest that you want to mention?
Okay. Well, one that you're going to have considerable interest in, and you will get to see it. I think in the late summer, early fall, it's going to air on the Country Music Network.
What?
I know. That doesn't sound like I'm enticing you. I'm burying the lead a little bit here.
Yeah.
But the movie, it's a documentary called The Bandit.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the making of Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, please.
I know, right?
Oh, please.
Okay, and it's precisely, it's the making of Smokey and the Bandit is sort of the middle area of the film. The movie is more about Hal Needham, really.
Yeah.
About his life as a stuntman and how he, got convinced people that he could direct this movie, and how he got, Burt to back him on it, because they were the best of friends. Needham was his stuntman for several years.
Right.
Obviously. So this movie sort of goes back and forth between the making of the film and stuff with Burt's career. It goes into how the Cosmopolitan shoot he thinks was like one of the worst things he possibly did to his career at the time. It's entertaining, and it only seems like it's a movie that kind of scratches the surface,
because
mm-hmm. there's so much history there that it almost seems impossible to to get around in an 80-minute movie.
Yeah.
So it's really this is sort of just like this is almost like a prologue into something bigger.
Okay.
But that prologue is still incredibly entertaining.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. It's going to be on the Country Music Network. So, okay, we got...
Of course you know the scene, the Smokey and the Bandit, where they jump onto the Little League field.
Yeah.
Okay? They almost killed all those kids. I mean, seriously, they have footage from, like, inside the car, and they slow it down. And they have pictures of the two stunt drivers getting out of the car, and they look like they just killed the world.
70s, man. Who cares? It's the
70s. There's a lot of that type of anecdotes in it.
That's great. Okay, you got time for one more quick one. What's the one you want to tell us about the most?
Another horror film. That was the last film that I saw at South by Southwest. It's a new film by Fede Alvarez, who did the Evil Dead remake.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's a film. It came into South by Southwest called The Untitled Fede Alvarez Horror Project or something like that. It actually has a title now. It's called Don't Breathe.
Don't Breathe, okay.
Yes, and it stars Jane Levy from Evil Dead and Stephen Lang, the great Stephen Lang. And it's about these three punks who plot a home invasion of a blind man, who's played by Stephen Lang, because he's won this settlement and they believe he's got a big stack of cash somewhere in his house in the dilapidated area of Detroit. So they break into the house, and basically, let's just say, things don't quite go their way. Mm-hmm. And for like the first half of this movie, it's kind of routine, kind of seen the stuff before. You kind of get a sense where the shift in loyalties are going to happen. And I got to a point in this movie where I almost completely checked out. I was just like, all right, that's it. And I just kind of like slammed my hand down. I'm like, all right. And then for the last 45 minutes, it just brought me back, mm-hmm. which is a neat trick, by the way. Mm-hmm. And Fede Alvarez shows that he really does have some skill and he really has some ideas how to craft suspense sequences. And he does some beautiful stuff, especially with a dog in the movie.
Yeah.
And it just really, I mean, all I want sometimes out of a horror movie like this is just to be just a little clever.
Yeah.
And this movie is a little more clever than that.
Good.
At times.
Good. And how is Jane Levy? Because, like, her performance in the Evil Dead remake is one of my favorite female horror performances of all time.
Oh, you'll enjoy it.
Oh, good.
You'll definitely enjoy it. She gets the point in this movie where, yeah, she's going to be, like, your hero.
All right, cool. All right. So. We got to run, but, Eric, thanks a lot, man, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, Eric Childress, everybody. You can check out efilmcritic.com, rogerebert.com as well, and the movie reviews will come back again next Monday. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That's from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which is one of my favorite movies ever. And you just heard Eric and Colin and I review Pee-wee's Big Holiday, which is now available on Netflix. And I spoke with Esmeralda before the show. And Esmeralda, you indeed watched it over the weekend.
I did.
And?
It was so good.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really funny. Are you a fan of Pee-wee?
I guess so.
Oh, really?
Well, no, I don't. I haven't really seen the movies. I've seen bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen the show, but I was never too big of a, like, addicted to it or anything.
Yeah.
But when it was on, I would watch it.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of the absolute opposite of what you just said, because I was addicted to Pee-wee's Playhouse. I think it's one of the greatest TV shows of all time. And I've seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure 8 million times. And I thought they did a great job with it. Now, Dan, you have Netflix, right, Dan?
I do, yes.
Yeah. Are you planning on watching it?
You know, I there are other things that I have ahead of me, but I'm sure, like, on a night that we're free,
yeah,
we'll turn it on.
Yeah. Am I the only one who's, like, insane about Pee-wee Herman here? I guess I am.
I consider myself a fan.
Yeah?
Not insane about. And I do Netflix, and they've been, you know, advertising it when I turn on my iPad, you know, let you know that it's coming up. I didn't realize it was this weekend, though, so it shows how much I've been paying attention.
I watched it immediately when I got home from work Friday morning.
Maybe I'll watch it today or tonight. Right.
And I was just beside myself during most of it. It's really funny. And as we were saying, Esmeralda, do you have a favorite section? Because, you know, like, it's just a bunch of adventures that Pee-wee goes on with different wacky characters in different situations. And I mentioned my favorite is the Amish sequence, which I just think is hysterical. And the balloon gag is one of the funniest things I've seen in a movie all year.
I did like when he got onto the bus with the people with the hair. Yeah. I was like, oh, I like their hair. And then the Katharine Hepburn-esque lady.
Yes.
She was pretty good.
Yes. She's in Big Adventure. She's the only... I think she's the only person that is in both. She's in Big Adventure.
Who is she from Big Adventure?
She is the girl that the waitress who he kind of like,
oh, she goes to France.
Flirts with. Yeah. She goes to France, and the one that's in the dinosaur when her boyfriend comes back and starts going nuts.
Everyone I know has a big butt.
It's a big butt. That's a big butt. You got to see Pee-wee's Big Adventure again, Esmeralda. You got to watch it all the way from the beginning, especially if you like this one.
Right, yeah, I'm going to have to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just a classic.
And now I'm curious about the metal plate. I won't go any further. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
I do
about.
Know what you're talking
about.
Is
there like something in the other movies? Or
no,
is that
not really.
They...
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, is that in the other movie?
There's not really anything connected. You know what I mean?
Okay.
There's just that one cast member. She doesn't play the same character that she did in Big Adventure. And there are little jokes here and there. I mean, but the structure of the movie is exactly the same as Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It's exactly the same. Instead of being invited to, a movie star's party in New York that requires him to travel cross country, his bike gets stolen in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Right.
And he has to go, and he wants to go find his bike.
And I did wonder, because he said, because, he's like, I don't leave my little town.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait.
Yeah.
But you did.
Yeah. It's a one and off.
So, assuming they start back from one. Then.
Yeah. Yeah. But the whole thing at the beginning where he's driving through the town in the little car. I don't know. It's just everything about Pee-wee makes me laugh.
Yeah, there was all these little things in there where I just kept questioning because it's so silly.
Yeah.
Like the diner guy.
Mm-hmm.
I like how when Pee-wee's gone, everything's mayhem. And
yeah.
It's like, how do you not know how to cook, man?
Yeah. No, this is
you own a diner.
That's the world of Pee-wee Herman.
Own a business and you know nothing about it.
Pee-wee's gone and it's all done. It's all over.
Oh, also, can I say,
yeah,
when you see where he works,
yeah,
I immediately thought, I'm like, is he SpongeBob? Or, well, is Pee-wee, I'm assuming SpongeBob is based off of Pee-wee now. He's a man-child.
No, there's definitely an influence. There's no question about it that there's an influence of SpongeBob on Pee-wee that Pee-wee has had on the creators of SpongeBob.
And then his job, I was like, oh, come on.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was very much SpongeBob.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's recommended by everyone that I know who has seen it. It's Pee-wee's Big Holiday, and it's really funny. If you're a fan of the character of Pee-wee Herman, if you're a fan of what Paul Reubens does, you will not be disappointed. It is as funny as you can imagine. And I'm telling you, that one scene with the balloon, I was laughing the entire time, and it's a long gag. It's a very long gag, and it is hysterical. Absolutely. So anyway, get it now.